So we stopped last time and the appearance of Lord Varaha. Yes, it was the third canto, chapter 13. That's where we stopped. So in that, the first appearance of Krishna in this creation as the first incarnation is the Lord Varaha's appearance. But before we proceed further, I was just thinking that perhaps I should stress about Srimad Bhagavatam's importance and the glory of Srimad Bhagavatam in relationship with the all the other Vedic literature. Why we have to say this again and again is human mind is very much looks into different directions for spiritual knowledge. It has the inherent nature in him, in every living being, that it's looking for knowledge. Actually it's looking for Krishna. But that looking for knowledge ends up in different mind is so diverse and it is so branched, as it says in the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna says, Vyavasayatmigabuddhi samadhavnavidhiyate. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that when one's mind is going in different directions all the time, trying to dig something here, dig somewhere else, eventually Krishna says you won't find water anywhere. You have to dig in one place continuously for a long time. Then you will find water. Otherwise you won't find the benefit of digging or benefit of spiritual life till we come to understand what is the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled by Vedavyasa Maharshi. But before compilation of Bhagavatam, before compiling Srimad Bhagavatam, there were so many things that happened which encouraged Vedavyasa Maharshi, who is Krishna himself. Another name of Vedavyasa is Krishna Dvaivayani. And Vedavyasa is known more in that name and he is liked to be called as Krishna Dvaivayani more than Vedavyasa. There is a reason also behind that, why he has been called as Krishna Dvaivayani. If you look into Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find that Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the statement Satyam Param Dhimahi. The first verse itself is beginning with the statement Janmadhyase Dhanvaya. If you go through that verse, in the end you will find the statement there Satyam Param Dhimahi. Srimad Bhagavatam finishes also with the same statement. That is the most interesting thing. If you look into the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, just before the last two verses, it says there that the verse ends with Srimad Bhagavatam Puranamamalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam Yasmin Paramahamsamegamamalam Jnanam Param Giyaveem Yatra Jnanam Viraga Bhakti Sahidam Maishkarmyam Avishkradam Yachunman Patipatan Vijaranavaro Bhaktya Vimuchirnaraha. That Bhagavatam says there that what is the position of Srimad Bhagavatam in relationship with all other scriptures is this, that Puranam Amalam, among all the Puranas, it is the most Amalam, or in other words, the most pure. It has not its least tinge of mode of passion or mode of ignorance. Or neither of them has even touched Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is the glory of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yasmin, therefore, Paramahamsamegam Amalam. That who relishes Srimad Bhagavatam, it is relished by the personalities of the highest order in spiritual life, Paramahamsas. That is why it's called, at the end of all the chapters in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find Paramahamsa Dharmam. That means Paramahamsas read Srimad Bhagavatam and they who relish Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the glory of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not meant for ordinary people, actually. none of us are actually qualified to understand what is Srimad Bhagavatam because of our own polluted state of mind. We haven't got that purity in us to relate Srimad Bhagavatam. But still, because Krishna has said that you read Srimad Bhagavatam, eventually you will understand it. That is Krishna's statement. Today you may not understand anything from Srimad Bhagavatam, what Bhagavatam is trying to tell us. We try to read Bhagavatam, sometimes we understand something, sometimes we don't understand anything. And then we leave it and we go looking for something else somewhere. This is the human nature. But Srimad Bhagavatam was not presented to this world in that way. We have to think a lot more things before that. I just thought it is necessary to restate and again talk with full conviction that this is what Bhagavatam is offering. There is no necessity to go into looking to other Vedic literature or any literature to find out what is the truth behind all this. Satyam Bharam Dhimahi. That Satyam, or Vedavyasa Maharshi says there, it is actually in his heart, in his mind, it was always Krishnam Param Dhimahi. It was Krishna who was there in Vedavyasa Maharshi's heart. And that was obvious. And that it is the same Satyam Param Dhimahi. He finished Bhagavatam also with the same verse. Now, normally, Krishna is referred to as Sachidanandam. Why he is called Sachidanandam? I do not know how people understand this word, Sachidanandam. It's like in the Brahma Samhita also in the beginning we say, Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govindam Sarvagarana Karanam. Krishna is the cause of all causes. Everything is coming from Krishna. Krishna is the origin of everything. Material or spiritual, no matter what it is, everything is coming from Krishna. So Krishna is the origin of everything. Now, in the same thing it is said, Sachidananda Rubayam Vishyolpatyadi Hedavi Tabatraya Vinashaya Shri Krishnaya Vayannuvam. So, Krishna's position in spiritual knowledge is such that He is the origin. He is, from Him everything comes. And therefore, this word Sat, Chit and Anandam or Sachidananda Rubayam, or he says there, Sachidananda Vigraha. Krishna is always referred to this word, Sat, Chit and Anandam or Sachidanandam. Why Krishna is called with this word has a lot of significance. It's not that some name has been given to Krishna, eternal, blissful and knowledge as we translate it in English. If you analyze this word, Sachidanandam, you will be amazed that how much is Krishna is represents these three words completely. That is why in the Brahma Samhita, when Lord Brahma was praying, he addressed to Krishna, Sachidananda Vigraha. That Vigraha, that form of Krishna, what he Brahma has seen is Sat, Chit and Anandam. Now, Sachidananda means actually, if you look at that word very carefully, you will notice that Anandam is bliss. That is how we translate that into English. But this Anandam is not something which is easily available in this in our normal life. For example, Anandam, sometimes people say, I am enjoying this world. Many people will make that statement, I am enjoying my life, I am enjoying this, I am enjoying that. But all the so-called Anandam of these conditioned souls is only subjected to one thing, and that is distress. There no Anandam in this world, as they refer to, is free from distress. That is the first thing we have to understand. Like, it takes anybody for that matter, people who are trying to gratify their senses, people who try to enjoy on a higher plane, mental speculation or anything for that matter, eventually the material way of life will eventually catch up with them and give them some distress or the other. Now, in the Shastric terms, from the spiritual viewpoint, that Anandam is not considered as Anandam. It is only an experience of this material world. Pure Anandam or pure bliss is that Anandam which has no tinge of distress at any time, in any circumstances. Many times when we analyze this world, you can see that normally people, for example, those who try to find Anandam in alcohol, they try to find Anandam there also. But when what they do not remember is that when they are trying to find that anandam, all they are trying to do is trying to forget their distress by finding anandam in alcohol. So this is the kind of anandam what is available in this world. And that is how the Shastras talk about it. That every anandam what one is searching for, or the happiness that one is searching for in this material world, is mixed with the distress. One cannot free oneself from that. That is the nature of the material world. Nobody is able to enjoy eternally or enjoy experience that bliss what Shastra talk about as anandam. That anandam doesn't exist in this life, in this way of life, what we lead in our regular life. So that anandam, whether it is referred to a person who enjoys alcohol, who enjoys something else in the sense gratification process, he mistakenly takes that sense gratification as anandam. That is his anandam. But sense gratification cannot be anandam. Why? Because senses are subjected to decay and death. It is a manifestation of Maya. All these senses are come from Maya. Maya's different ways of engaging us in this material world through the sense gratification eventually ends up in distress, or this ends up in frustration. But if there is a happiness beyond the happiness of the senses, beyond the happiness of the bodily senses of happiness, that happiness is referred to beyond the body and the mind, and referred to the spiritual platform, that anandam is referred to as, that is the real anandam, which is mentioned here as Sachidanandam. Now, one tries to understand in one's life, one is trying to cultivate spiritual knowledge. Now, spiritual knowledge, when one tries to understand, everyone wants to find out the truth behind it. Why am I here in this world? What am I trying to learn? What am I trying to understand? So, in that process, often what happens is that we have a tendency to analyze different things in this material world. Just like there are so many objects in this world, like for example the earth, the water, so many different living entities, the trees, the plants, the wood, the stone. It's unlimited number of things in this world. And in each and every one of them, we try to understand what that particular matter is. That's the way we conduct research. The modern scientists go through this process. They are trying to study individually each object in this world and trying to understand that object. So, in that process they think that at some point or the other, they will understand, they will get to know the truth behind all these things. This is their way of analysis. In other words, all that has manifested in this world, they will try to study this manifested objects like this material world. And by analyzing this material world, they will try to understand the, find out the truth behind it. But Vedic viewpoint, or all the great sages and Krishna's viewpoint, is different. Krishna is saying that everything in this material world has come from me. So instead of trying to understand all these different objects in this world and trying to cultivate knowledge and finding the truth in that way, rather you should come back to the source of all these objects and understand the source. And this is precisely the reason why in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Brahma Sutram also, Vedavyasa Maharshi says there, Janma Adyasayadaha, that the definition of Krishna, definition of God, in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the great literature, is that source from which everything emanates. Because everything comes from Krishna, once you know Krishna, there is absolutely no necessity to study any of these manifestations of Krishna, which has manifested in the material world or in the spiritual world. Therefore, the definition of Krishna is Janma, everything that originates is from Krishna. So studying Krishna is the business, is the best research one can do to understand the truth. There is no better process, and that is the Vedic process. Vedic process completely says that if you try to develop knowledge of the different material objects, eventually you will never, because it is so vast. And this process, in your own lifetime, you may study and then you will not end up anywhere. But if you start trying to study the source of all these objects, which is Krishna, then eventually, by Krishna's grace, you will get to know that all this is not something to be known, rather everything is the manifestation of Krishna. So this is how the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam begins. That Bhagavatam's specific point, Bhagavatam is trying to point out, is this, that the origin is important, the source of everything is important, not the what that has manifested from Krishna at a later date, at some point in the creation. So that's one thing. Secondly, if you think that thinking about Krishna's this knowledge, what we have developed about these different objects, we think that we have the knowledge of that. But there is a knowledge, when one attains that knowledge, he understands that all that what he has learned all along his life was ignorance. There is a kind of knowledge, and that is what is known as chitta. Sat chit and anandam. That chitta is that knowledge by which, when one understands Krishna, chitta is the knowledge by which one understands Krishna. When he realizes that this material manifestation are all manifestations of Maya, Maya's different manifestations have come. Because what is the definition of Maya? Definition of Maya is anything that has born, that has grown for some time, that has sustained some time, that has created byproducts, that starts dwindling, eventually decay and death. So these six different processes, whenever that happens to any object which is in this material world, always happens. All that are actually nothing but Maya's manifestation at somewhere or the other. So, simply studying Maya's energies at any point in time is not going to bring us the result what we eventually need. Studying Maya is not the perfection of acquiring knowledge. So, Shastra says that all the Vedic literature and particularly Srimad Bhagavatam point out to this, that if you want, that is that knowledge, Vedic knowledge, spiritual knowledge is that knowledge. When one attains that knowledge, all other knowledge seems to be ignorance. In other words, it was all ajnanam. Jnanam, when that jnanam comes properly, that ajnanam is goes away from that. So that knowledge which takes away all the ignorance, that is the real knowledge. So otherwise the other knowledge has no value. There are so many institutions and people who are conducting so much study into so many things, and big universities and institutions spend so much energy and time. But still, they are where they started. They haven't got anywhere. It is saying the story, showing the truth again and again, and speculating all the time, but never get to know what is the truth behind it. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, it is at this point that our turns our mind to understand that it is that Sachidananda aspect, or the chit aspect of Krishna, that is real knowledge. Nothing else is knowledge, is considered to be knowledge, which is free from the defects of the illusion, or the defects of illusion. Illusion is generally referred to Brahman, Pramadam, Vipralipsam and Karanapadam. Generally, it's translated as the our tendency to commit mistakes, propensity to cheat, illusion and imperfect senses. That is what Shastra says as Brahman, Pramadam, Vipralipsam and Karanapadam. So, these four defects, while they are existing in the living entity, he has no opportunity, this research process going to work very much, unless he receives this knowledge from the sources, from the authorities itself. And therefore, Shastras becomes important. So, Chit is that knowledge, what knowledge that has been acquired through the study of the Shastra. And through Shastras, when one has developed that knowledge, he will notice, he will find that all the so-called research work in this material world is simply nothing but a waste of time. It's not going to bring anything at the end. You can spend as much amount of time and energy, but at the end of the lifetime, you will find that you are where you have started. And the things what you try to understand will never come to your knowledge, because that's the way the material creation is. Now, this is the anandam and that is the chit. Now, so such means, when you have the knowledge of that source is the sat, and it is from sat that all this has come. The combined way, sat and the chit, you have the result what is known as anandam. And these three things together, sat, chit and anandam, is Krishna. Krishna is sachidanandam. Therefore, Krishna is always referred to sachidanandarubaya vishyolpatyadihedave tabatraya vinashaya shri krishnaya vayamma. That great sages, they are paying their respects to Krishna in this way. Sachidananda Rubaya Krishna's body is Sachidananda. Krishna is not like us. Our body is conditioned and our body is material. Also, our body is subjected to all the problems of this material world. Krishna is different. Krishna's body is free from all these illusions, all these imperfections, and all the influences of the illusory energy, like we are subjected to birth, death, old age and disease. So, from a spiritual point of view, from a spiritual angle, when we look at it, you can see Krishna's statement in the Bhagavad Gita that what should one do when he is in the material condition state? Krishna says there, Amanitya madam bitvam, ahimsa chandirarjavam, ajaryopasanam shaujam, sthairyam alpavinigraha, indriyarteshu vairagyam, anahangara evaja, janmam mrityu jaravyadhi, dukha doshanudarshanam, asatyarabhishvanga, putradvaragrahadishu, nityanjasamajittattvam, ishta ishtobavattishu. Krishna says, for a person who is conditioned in this material world, this is his opportunity to get out. He has no other opportunity. This human form of life is so valuable that if he does not utilize it to get out of this cycle of birth and death, Krishna says, you have lost the greatest opportunity or greatest chance in your existence forever. That such a valuable human form of life, Krishna says, amanittam adambittam, and number of qualities, Krishna says, for a devotee to understand. And mai jananya yogena bhakti gavya pirarini vivitta desha sevitvam aradir janasamsadim. But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that when one has come to this realization, understand my position, that means Krishna's position, and understand our position, that means living entity's position, which is different from Krishna's position, and then he can serve Krishna, he can surrender unto Krishna and take shelter of Krishna. And at that point, Krishna says, Dadami buddhi yogandam yenamam ubayam divem. At that point, I'll give him the right understanding to come back to me. That is how Krishna says. So this word Sachidanandam has come from this background, that exactly, precisely defining Krishna's role or Krishna's supreme personality of Godhead. And that is the point that is being stressed in the Brahma Samhita as well as in the Padma Purana through these verses. So, just like if you want to understand something, that in one in this body, for example, sometimes you may have a pain in the leg, but if you go to the doctor, he will take the blood from your finger or somewhere, but testing this blood, he is able to understand what is the disease, although that is a pain in the leg or some other place in the body, somewhere else in the body. Still by using the blood and you conducting a blood test, he is able to still understand that what is actually the problem in the body, because the blood is presence is everywhere. And because of the nature of being present everywhere, Krishna's position is also like that. In all these living entities, the inert matter or the moving and living entities everywhere, Krishna is present. And by knowing Krishna, all these things are automatically known, because Krishna's manifestations, they have come from Krishna. Just like in the Ekadasha Skandam, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the four Kumaras went to see Krishna to Lord Brahma once. And Brahma, being the father, before Kumaras paid their obeisances to Brahma and raised a few questions to Brahma. The question was that the mind and the sense objects, they seem to be always in touch with each other. When the mind wants to keep away from the sense objects will say, we will come to you if you can't come to us. This is how they relate each other. So, what is the process by which we can break away the sense objects from the mind? This was the question the four Kumaras asked Lord Brahma. Brahma could not answer that question because he himself was puzzled when he heard this question. And it was at that time that Krishna has appeared as Hamsa, as a swan, and delivered the four Kumaras from their doubt, cleared this doubt to them. And there he says that if you do not know yourself what you are, what is the point in looking for me somewhere else when you don't know who you are? Ko bhavanidhi, it says there in the Bhagavatam. Who are you that you do not know? Yourself are not sure who you are. And they had to tell the four, Krishna had to tell the four Kumaras that this one spirit, which is the Krishna's part and parcel, is this living entity. He is not different from Krishna in the sense that in qualitatively he is the same as Krishna's qualities are in him. The spiritual quality or the spiritual nature of the living entity is the same as Krishna. He is the power, is the spark of that huge fire known as Krishna. And Krishna's small spark is all of us. All the living entities are that small spark from the huge fire Krishna. So if you understand the small spark properly, that is why we say self-realization. Once we realize the self, what we are, this spark, what it is, the huge fire which is burning behind this spark, Krishna will also be revealed to us who it is. Because that relationship between the spark and the huge fire is very close. So that is the process of understanding Krishna. So indeed, in our normal life also, to understand all these things, to what we talk from the spiritual terms, it is sometimes very, very difficult for many people to accept all these things. Rather, they will go to another a university or somewhere where they will think that they have probably a higher knowledge about life. But knowledge about life from Vedic viewpoint is something different than the way the material scientists will present it as well. Like, in fact, to acquire spiritual knowledge, there are certain qualifications also. It's not that everyone will accept the spiritual principles easily. Like the lower modes of nature will not allow him to come to the proper understanding of the spiritual nature of a living entity. So therefore, there are certain qualities like Nityam and Anitya Vastu Vivekam. It says there that one should be able to discriminate what is permanent and what is temporary. If one has no discrimination about even that, and one starts studying everything what is temporary object in this world, his research may not give the desired result. That is why it says Nitya Anitya Vastu Vivekam. That means these are the Shastric terms which is generally practiced by the great Jnanis, and they follow this path. And then they also say Iha Mutra Phala Bhoga Vinayam, that renunciation from all desires for enjoying the senses. And then control of the mind, senses, and also ability to focus the mind on the truth, and eventually a very, very strong desire to free oneself from the clutches of material existence, which is known as mokshatvam. Mokshatvam means a strong desire to free oneself from this conditioned state of life. So, like that, there are so many basic requirements for spiritual life also. Spiritual life doesn't easily give the desired strength and desired result unless one follows the route what is described in the Shastra. So Shastra viewpoint is that when one has got this discrimination, he is able to think and use his mind to analyze these things in the Vedic tradition, then he will see there is a truth behind all these things. For example, let us look at it this way, that we should learn to forget things what are not necessary, and we should be able to remember things what is necessary. That is, everybody will accept that viewpoint, that we should be able to remember things what is necessary. But we should be also able to forget things what is not necessary. But think about ourselves. It is the opposite way life works. What is not necessary, we will always remember. And what is necessary, we will forget. Because you can see, we want to remember about Krishna all the time. We want to remember Krishna every second in life, because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we have a relationship with Krishna. We are Krishna's servants, so we have to remember Krishna. But no matter how hard you try, Krishna doesn't stay in the heart easily. We forget Krishna in a second, our mind goes in some other direction. But on the other hand, if somebody has done something to us which was not very pleasant, day or night, in the dreams, in Sushupti, all the time, this will come and bang on us. All the time banging us. Why is it like this? What is the reason behind it? This is something you should think about. Why is it like that? The mind has got this nature that we know that it is not right to remember that. We should know how to forget things also in life. Sometimes if somebody has offended us or somebody has committed something which is not very pleasant, due to some modes of nature he might have acted in that way. So as an intelligent person, one should be able to forget that. And as an intelligent person, one should also be able to remember the Supreme Lord all the time in this short span of existence in this world. But that's not happening. It's just the opposite thing all the time. No matter how hard you try to remember Krishna in this world, it has become very, very, it's difficult. On the other hand, everything what you don't want to remember will come one after the other, like a waves in the ocean. One after the other follow, and then one gets wound up with that and then enters into some activity which may not create more havoc after that, and then gets entangled in that way and gets the lifetime spent in that way. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a very, very nice story in relationship to this. Ekadasha Skandam, where Krishna has took special care to instruct Uddhava before he left this world. In that Ekadasha Skandam, there are basically three main topics of discussion. And in the Shastra, it is known as Samvadam. Samvadam means discussion on a spiritual level between a teacher and a disciple. So the first discussion is between Krishna's parents and Sri Narada Muni. Sri Narada Muni discusses, it is all, there is a lot of background behind it, why Narada Muni got into that situation to discuss with Vasudeva and Devaki. Vasudeva and Devaki spent a lot of time in Dwarka after Krishna established the kingdom there. And then Ugrasena was established as the king. And a lot of things happened at that long period of time when Krishna spent his time in Dwarka. But at that same time, Sri Narada Maharshi had once a discussion between Vasudeva and Devaki, and that is known in the Bhagavatam as Vasudeva Narada Samvadam, or the discussion between Vasudeva and Sri Narada Muni on being prompted by Krishna from within. Sri Narada Muni came to see Vasudeva and Devaki, and Vasudeva and Devaki were prompted by Krishna from within to ask certain questions. And that discussion between Vasudeva and Devaki is in the first few chapters of the Ekadasha Skandam of the 11th canto. After that, there is a discussion which Sri Narada Muni has quoted in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In a sacrifice he has participated sometime in the past in the kingdom of Videha, that is Janaka's kingdom, is also known as Nini at that time. So that discussion between Nini and the sons of Jayanti. Jayanti is Indra's daughter. So you will know in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that Maharaj Rishabhadev married Indra's daughter, who is Jayanti. And from Jayanti, Maharaj Rishabhadev had begotten 100 children. Out of that 100 children, 9 of them are known as Yogeshwaras, great powerful yogis they were, that who knew what is Krishna consciousness. That is how they are presented in the Srimad Bhagavatam. To hear about them, we have to wait till the 11th canto comes. It is the 11th canto where all glories manifest. All these things, what we are doing today, is nothing but that has come from them, including the holy name, the Mahamantra Hare Krishna. Even that has come from them. We will talk about that, how that happened. So, there we will see that Nimi and Jayanti's children, the Jayante Samvadam, as it is mentioned there, Kavirhari Andariksha Prabuddha Pipalayanam Avirhotros Chatramina Chamasa Karabhajanam. These are the nine yogis who had complete freedom to travel anywhere. And the good, interesting thing about them was, whenever they traveled, they spoke about Krishna consciousness. One person spoke and all the other 8 persons listened to them. And they had the freedom to travel from universe to universe and speak about Krishna consciousness, and they were present there in the sacrifice of Nimi Maharaj and Nimi Jayandeya Samvadam, which is a very, very important part in the instructions of the Ekadasi Skanda. And after that, in the 11th canto, you will notice one more discussion, and that is between Krishna and Uddhava. Krishna and Uddhava are discussing there. Uddhava, at that point, had so many questions to ask, knowing very well that Krishna was leaving this planet and going back to his own abode. In that, this story appears there. This story of the two birds, which is, there is a presentation of Krishna talks about Atreya Rishi's sannyasa ashram, and in that sannyasa ashram, Atreya Rishi's spiritual masters, whom he has approached and what he learned from them. This disciple's relationship with the spiritual master and constant development of spiritual knowledge is an essential part in one's life. If one do not cultivate spiritual understanding and one do not progress on the spiritual path regularly by constantly studying Srimad Bhagavatam and all the other important associated instructions from Krishna, the chances that at one some stage in life you may find that Krishna consciousness is not giving the satisfaction what the living entity is looking for. So it's nothing unusual that this Ekadasi Skanda, Krishna before he left this world, has left two instructions in this world for the humanity, for the human society. In the form of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna instructed Arjuna and given to this world this classic book, Bhagavad Gita, and for the human society to relish. Through Uddhava, Krishna instructed in Ekadasi Skanda 1036 verses in the 26 chapters there. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, there is 700 verses. And these instructions in the Ekadasi Skanda, which Krishna gave to Uddhava, was actually an aftermath or after when he was preparing himself to leave this world, Krishna thought to himself, what is there for me to further to give it to this world? Krishna had a very detailed, in-depth analysis with Uddhava together, what Krishna should do. And Krishna took Uddhava's instruction at that point, and Uddhava's advice at that point, and it is on Uddhava's advice that Krishna came forward and spoke this Ekadasi Skanda, or the 26 chapters in the 11th canto. So, you will notice all this one point, that in that instruction, Krishna brings this person, two birds, as a part of a spiritual master, the role of a spiritual master. Two birds coming in the role of a spiritual master. And that's very interesting, because normally we think spiritual master is somebody who is a sannyasi with a danda, and a sannyasi who has learned, or sannyasi who has practicing spiritual life very seriously, and they are generally in this material world considered as spiritual masters. But here you will notice that that Krishna has brought these two birds as spiritual masters. How come such a thing has happened? Because to learn spiritual knowledge in this world, if one is very keen in observing things, Krishna says this material world is nothing but a school for him. It is an open school for anybody who wants to develop spiritual knowledge. Only then the person should have a keen desire and a keen observation power, and which will eventually make him the understanding of the spiritual reality behind this material world. It will come to him. Atreya Rishi was a great Dattatreya Rishi. Story is there in the Bhagavatam. Krishna says there, this Atreya Rishi, his sannyasam is discussed there, that in Krishna's in that dynasty, prior to that, we had a great king called Yadu, and therefore all the members of that family are called as Yadavas. So this king Yadu, in his travels one day, he comes around, and in the banks of a river, he meets this sannyasi lying down in the sand, fully relaxed and without being disturbed by anything. King Yadu, when he saw this sannyasi, he could see from the way he spoke, from the way he was lying down, that this person has something, a difference in him than compared to all other personalities he met. And out of huge respect, he went up to him, paid his obeisances, and inquired from him that how did he reach this state of mind, this state of consciousness. It is then that he replies that Prathameva Yuragasham Abhavni Chandramanravi Kapodam Adhagara Sindhu Pathanga Madhugram Grajam Madhuha Harinam Meena Pingala Akuridarbhaga Kumari Shanaval Sarpam Unana Vishudeshagral. That is how he is answered. That this is my, these are all the personalities I learned the lessons from. Gives a list of people. And some of them, there are 24 of them mentioned there. And out of them, some of them are telling us that we should learn from them in something good. And some of them are telling us we should not learn from them and destroy ourselves in that way. That is the way these spiritual masters instruct in that chapter. So there, these two birds comes in. Krishna says that this Yadu, King Yadu, our ancestor, says to Uddhava, our ancestor, because they are going to both belong to Yadavas. Our ancestor, King Yadu, Krishna says, went to him, to this Atre. Dattatreya Rishi was lying there and asked him, and Dattatreya Rishi told him, and out of them, two of them were these two birds. Now, what did these birds he learn from? We were talking about, we have to learn, I was saying this before, we have to learn to forget things, what is required. And we have to learn to remember things, what is necessary. But we are not able to do that. The story of these birds will show you that how strong this point is, gets across into your head when in our own daily life. And then you can see that how much is necessary, that again and again we have to tell our mind that what is the right thing and what is the wrong thing. Otherwise, mind will lead us into the wrong direction. So these two birds, the Tantra Rishi was walking around. He was walking, observing things, different things in this world. Prithvi, earth, vayu, air, agasham, sky, avam, water. Like this, so many things he is seeing. And from everybody, he used to spend a lot of time with each one of them. Can you imagine somebody looking at the earth and spending a lot of time thinking about the earth? But that was their capability, that was the observation power and intelligence that person had. We will think, oh, as soon as we see the earth, what can I get out of the earth? This is our thinking. But that is not the way they thought, because they had this ability to discriminate between the manifested matter and see this matter is nothing but a manifestation of Krishna. When one has that spiritual realizations in him, he will see from everything, he is able to withdraw himself, because everything what is driving us to enjoy matter is this strong desire for sense gratification. So when there is a strong desire like that, that will compel us. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it will compel you to act one way or the other. It will not allow you to refrain and put your mind back and to think carefully why I am implicated in this. That thought never comes to that person. So anyway, here King Yadu, he traveled a lot. He went to different objects, learned different things, because we haven't got so much time today. I'll just talk about this birds issue, because that's something important to remember. So when Atreya Rishi he was walking through the forest, and on the top of a tree he saw these two birds sitting there, and obviously by looking at them he could see that I have something to learn from them. Can you imagine anybody seeing two birds in the sky and thinking that I got something to learn from them? Who will think like that in today's world? Who will think, how can I shoot them first? Bring it up. This is how degraded our thinking is. And that is what our mentality is. That's what we think. But there it says in the Bhagavatam, if you read Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, you will think, understand this point. And it will wake you up to see things in a completely different perspective. Bhagavatam says there that when Atreya Rishi came to those and saw those birds, he sat down on the ground. That's what it says. He sat there and started looking at the birds. What is there to learn from them? He is thinking like this, looking at the birds. He was thinking, what is there for me to learn from them? And for some time he couldn't find anything, but he didn't give up, because he said, there is something to learn from them also for me. To cultivate renunciation, detachment of this material world and the objects of sense gratification is not very easy. Sometimes people say, oh, I am not so attached to anything. I am completely detached. You know their attachment, how strong that attachment is. Only you have to talk to them about the prasadam time, and then you will see how much that detachment is there. So that kind of attachment is not what we are talking about. We are talking about attachment and enunciation, what Krishna is talking about to Uddhava. So this King Yadu sat down and looked at the birds, and after some time he realized that there were a couple, husband and the wife, female bird and the male bird. And as he had learned the art of the birds, the way the birds spoke, he could understand from them, from their expressions, what they were communicating to each other. So looking at them, one day he noticed that every morning they went out to earn their food. They traveled, they flew away in the early hours in the morning, and they got back late in the afternoon. They came home. And they always were found very happy in their exchange, loving exchanges between them. They earned their food every day. They didn't accumulate. They went out, collected food, and came home in the evening, visited a lot of places, and they were happy in their nest. And again, Atreya Rishi is thinking, what is there for me to learn from them? Every day he is asking this question to himself. Is there something I can learn from them? So one day it so happened that after a few weeks, that the female bird became pregnant. When the female bird, when she became pregnant, the male bird, he heard him saying to the female bird, I think till now we went out to get our food together, but from now on, you know, we are now going to start a family life. And the female bird was very, very serious about his getting his family life together. So he is telling the female bird, you know, you should rest now. You should not go out with me like this every day. Going out to work is not good. You should stay home. And you should look after the babies. The female bird, because of its affection and attachment to the male bird, said to the male bird that if you go on your own every day, till now, you were collecting food for yourself and I was collecting food for me. But now, if you start going out on your own, you have to collect for two of us, which will make you very tired after some time, because it's a lot of work for you. Male bird said to the female, no, it's necessary, because in your present condition, it's not good for you to fly around looking for food, rather you stay home. So anyway, they agreed to each other. For some time, the male bird was getting its food, plus it was bringing its food to the food for its wife also, for the female bird. And Atreya Rishi is thinking, is there something I can learn from this? Look at that observation power and analysis. He is still thinking, there is something I have to learn from their life. And after some time, the female bird has the babies. The babies were born. The few little ones have come out from that relationship. So when the children were born, the female bird put one proposal to the male bird one night, and Atreya Rishi is listening to it. What was the proposal? Proposal was this, that now that we have got a family, few children also, it's not right for you to work so hard to maintain yourself and to maintain all of us. Previously it was only one for oneself. Oneself one had to earn. Now you have to earn for you, for me, and for all these babies. And that's a lot of work. And if you, one day, if you keep on working like this, you may not be there to look after us. So we want to live like this forever, reasoning, happily. So this proposal was coming from the female bird. So the male bird said, no, I am not at all tired. I can still work. I am young. I can work hard, bring more food for you. Till they grow up, you should look after them, and all he was telling. But female bird said, no, you know, we should share this, isn't it, the life burden. and we should share. This way she was proposing to him. Eventually, eventually, the male bird agreed that leaving those few small babies there, the female bird decided in the morning to go with the male bird looking for its food. So while going out, she instructed the small babies, the who were very, very small. They were not even able to fly for a long time. They'll just come out of the, with their wings on and fly a short distance and they will fall straight away. They are not developed their power of the wings enough. Because for the birds, that is the greatest power, the wing, the ability to fly, which we don't have. So they have, that's a special potency of Krishna present in the birds, that ability to fly, which is Krishna's special opulence present in the birds. Like every living entity has Krishna, some opulence present in them. And for in the Bhagavan, it's again and again saying this, this vibhuti, what is known as Krishna's different opulences, are present in every living entity all the time. And this special vibhuti or special opulence is present in the birds as in the form of ability to fly. So the babies were instructed not to go anywhere, not to go anywhere, rather stay there. And given all strong warnings by the mother that they should stay in and they should only come out when both parents come back in the evening. So everything was agreed and they went out. But one day, in that process, after she says, I was watching them, and these birds came out from inside. They just thought that there is probably mother has come out, and because in that initial enthusiasm to fly, they came out. And by chance, a hunter also walked in on the same spot. So as soon as he saw these small birds flying there, what did he do? He threw his net around at the bottom. And he knew very well how to imitate the mother bird, mother female bird. So he started making the same sound like the female bird does, the mother bird does. The small babies hearing this, the sound of the mother from outside, thought that mother has come and came out happily flying. And in that process they fell into the net. And they fell in the net, they didn't know how to come out of it. They were crying there, lying in that net. That was their condition. So, when they fell into that net, when they couldn't escape, the mother wasn't there. The hunter thought that it was not a bad day for me today. That was his thinking. I have got this now. But if I can wait some time, he knew the psychology. The mother will come and then the father will come as well. So, exactly as he expected, Atreya, she says, by evening, mother arrived. When the mother comes, what did she see? She saw this pathetic condition of her own children. And she looked into the net, she looked down into the, she looked in the net down and she looked into the nest. She was heartbroken. She couldn't even take a drop of water, and all the food what she has got fell from her mouth. She, just for a second, she thought herself, what's the point in me living now? All that she was trying to live for, all that she was enjoying her happiness in this life, in this material world, has gone into this net. So she thought at that second, at very second, this thought came to her, is it not better for me to join them, rather than living in this world without their presence? Saying this, she jumped into that net herself. So, what did the hunter do at this time? Hunter said that it is not time yet. There is one more I can get into this net. This is how the hunter thought about it. And exactly after some time, the male bird also arrived. When the male bird came back, he saw this whole family's wife and the little children all in this net. He couldn't think anymore, anything after that. What is the point in me continuing life if this is what is in store for me? Everything for I have worked and I have lived is completely gone. Saying this, he also jumped into that net. And Atreya Rishi is thinking, what have I learned now? What did I learn from this? This is what he said. What did I learn from this incident? I have been seeing these birds for weeks and weeks now, for months probably. And what did I learn from them? He asking that question. Hunter as far as he is concerned, his business was over for the day. He says in the Bhagavatam that he collected the whole net together, walked away from there. Siddhartha Prameyao Griham. Then he went back home very happily. He walked back. It was not a bad day, he said. As far as he is concerned, it was not a bad day. But Atreya Rishi is thinking, what have I learned from this? And there is, in one verse, he summarized his realizations of this and gave to this world a very, very powerful instruction. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find in the 11th canto, Yam Prapyamansham Logam Mukti Dwaram Abhavradam Gagheshu Grihaval Saktam Tamarudachuram Vidu. That is how he put it. Yam Prapyamansham Logam. Atrayavishi says, I've got this human life. Somehow or the other, by Krishna's grace, I have reached this stage where I can understand all these things. In all other species, I have no power to discriminate. Discrimination is only possible in this human body which I have got now. He is saying this. Yam prapya manusham loham. What is the speciality of this body? Mukte dwaram abhavridam. If you put one more step from now, you are back into the spiritual world. That is the speciality of this body. If this body is properly utilized for advancing in spiritual life, this is the only body out of the 8.4 million species of life that is capable of getting you back into that spiritual world. That is the speciality of this human body. So he says there, Mukte dwaram apavadam, that the doors of liberation is lying open. If I use this body properly, I can walk into that spiritual world with from this body. This is how he thought about it. Yam prapya manusham logam mukte dwaram abhavradam. Then, griheshu khagaval saktam tamaru dachudam vidum. What did I learn from these words? I learned only one thing, that I should not get attached to the house, or the attachment to the any of the person, anything in this material world is dangerous for me. Actually, that bird, the male bird, should have had the capacity to forget what has happened and able to save itself, but the birds could not do it. This is the difficulty, that in certain bodies we are completely driven by mind, completely driven by senses and things like that. In human body, if it is cultivated properly, it can discriminate things and it has the ability to understand that there will be so many people will come in your life at some stage or the other, and so many people will leave you also at some point or the other. That is the nature of the material world. It is an inevitable thing of this material nature. That in that process, I am not the person to feel happy or lament about it. That is the right perception of that. That to feel happy or to lament in the arrival or the departure of a person is not something what Srimad Bhagavatam says there, is that a divinity should learn to cultivate. But we are not able to do that. And that is our weakness. So how strong this weakness is, you can see from this. That I was trying to say that we are not able to forget what we want and we are not able to remember what we want. But on the other hand, completely driven by emotions and feelings and sentiments of this world, we forget the our real business of this world, which is actually to go back home, back to Krishna. And that opportunity is missed, and opportunity is lost in this process. Some years ago, there was a great scholar of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam were at that time studied by personality persons who were very, very qualified in the sense that they had spent their brahmachari life properly in studying studying all the Vedic literature, particularly the language was mastered by the Brahmanas. And they studied Sanskrit to such an extent that they were able to really Srimad Bhagavatam completely. And there was a scholar like them who spoke Srimad Bhagavatam and made so much happiness to so many people. by his lectures on Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam has been a source of inspiration to devotees for thousands and thousands of years. And in one occasion, a king who ruled a particular area, he came to the temple, and they were not like today's kings. Today's kings either they have no power, and most of the so-called prime ministers and presidents, they come to visit temples or any religious institution only to show their show their support for their particular political party or whatever it is. Apart from that, there is no importance to it anymore. But that was not the system in the some few hundred years ago. It was the kings ruled and they had the absolute power in their hand. And they made sure that the temples were maintained nicely, and they always took the position that they are subordinate to the Supreme Lord who is present there in the deity form. That is, that relationship was, it was not to be discussed. There was no question of discussion who is big and who is small. The king came, paid his obeisances to the deity, because his administration is based on understanding that he is representative of Krishna. So when he comes to the temple, normally he will also take the opportunity to listen to Srimad Bhagavatam. That was also this particular king's habit. Not only him, many other kings also, always they did the same thing. It's not that they'll come all like a king with all the associates and then make a show and go away from there. No. When they come in, they will also like to hear if somebody is talking about Srimad Bhagavatam, they want to hear Srimad Bhagavatam there. So they will go and sit among the public. He will go and sit there and listen to Srimad Bhagavatam when it's spoken. That is the potency of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is not only for ordinary people. It's meant for everybody, right from the king, right up to any person in the street. It is meant for everyone. And that is Bhagavatam's unique position. So the king used to come and to listen to Srimad Bhagavatam from this person. And every time the king was affected by this, the Bhagavatam so much. So one day, when the lecture was over, the king went up to this Bhagavata, the devotee, and person who spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, the speaker, went up to him and told him. He felt extremely blissful, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from him, and told him that, please do not forget me till I see you next time. In a very courteous and polite way, he expressed his thankfulness to that speaker. The speaker, when he heard this request, he turned around and told him that, do you expect me to remember you all the time? He's saying to the king, this one. He said, no, say to me like this, please give me the strength to remember Krishna all the time. Not that we remember each other. That's not going to help. If I keep remembering you, he said to the king, suppose if I die tomorrow and I'm still remembering you, maybe I'll get a king's job next life. But that's not getting me out of this material world, he said to the king. So he corrected the king, then understanding that what is actually required in our daily relationships also, if you can remind somebody of Krishna, that is what is necessary. Nothing else. That is our duty to each other. If one can remind somebody of Krishna, that is the most important service what one can do to another person. And this is why it is says there in the Srimad Bhagavatam that this duty for every living entity to remember Krishna, to remind others of Krishna, is a living entity's responsibility. So eventually we hear that Srimad Bhagavatam was written down, Srimad Bhagavatam was presented, that when the Vedas were actually analyzed by Vedavyasa Maharshi, three different processes came out of the Vedas, which is known as the Jnana Kandam, Karma Kandam and Upasana Kandam. And it is Jnana Margam, Karma Margam and Bhakti Margam. Bhakti Margam is known as the Upasana Kandam. And this Bhakti Margam comes from the Upasana Kandam. It is from there to explain that Upasana Kandam, Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled so many Puranas. The 18 Puranas have come out. And out of those 18 Puranas, Three Puranas have given special significance in the age of Kali, particularly Srimad Bhagavatam, Garuda Puranam and Vishnu Puranam. It is specifically mentioned there. And again, out of these three, Srimad Bhagavatam has the most important and unique position as the most important scripture which presents the absolute truth to the in the age of Kali. So that is how it is mentioned in the about the Puranas in the. So when these Puranas were written, then if that is the case, why is that everybody is not reading Srimad Bhagavatam? That question automatically comes, isn't it? That people should read Srimad Bhagavatam. And if Srimad Bhagavatam is so important, why is that everybody do not take to Srimad Bhagavatam easily? There is a reason also behind it. When Sri Sudeva Goswami or Sri Brahma Shri was talking to Parikshit Maharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, the demigods came to see Sukadeva Goswami. It says in the Palpavaranam all these things that the demigods came to see Sukadeva Goswami, and they came with the pot of nectar to give it to Sukadeva Goswami, and in exchange they requested Sukadeva Goswami, give us Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what they said to him. Sukadeva Goswami looked at them and told them, who wants your nectar? He said to them, this nectar is actually polluted with a little bit poison also, because when they churn the ocean of milk, it is the poison that first came out, and it's later on that Dhanambari came with the pot of nectar. So Sudeva Goswami said, there is a possibility that even this is mixed with poison to some extent. But whereas Srimad Bhagavatam has no such poison in it. It is what is poison means. In from Sudeva Goswami's words, if you ask Sudeva Goswami what is poison, he will say poison is mode of passion and mode of ignorance. That is poison. When these two lower modes of nature touch anything, that is poison. And even the other Puranas have a tinge of that. Srimad Bhagavatam is free from that. And that is why Bhagavatam has this unique position among all the other Puranas. So, in this way, Srimad Bhagavatam was not given to the demigods. Demigods sat there. And for 7 days, they also heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami along with Parikshit Maharaj. And at the end of that, what did they see? They saw Parikshit Maharaj going back to the spiritual world. Demigods have this special opulence given to them by Krishna, that when a living entity from this material world is liberated and is on its way back to the spiritual world, they can see us going back to the spiritual world. Or when we are getting liberated, they are in a position to see us. And in the Elasha Skandam, Krishna also says there that at some time these demigods invite those liberated entities to come to their planets and to spend some time before they go back to the spiritual world. And that is also mentioned there. So, just like we are talking about the birds, they had the ability to fly. The demigods have already been given this kind of knowledge which we don't have. When a living entity is leaving this world and when it is free from the clutches of Maya or clutches of material nature, and when it is able to go back into Krishna's world or the spiritual world, the demigods see us leaving this and it says that they will create problems also at that time. If you by demigod worship and getting attached to demigods, sometimes they can also cause problems at that point. And it says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that all they will do is delay your going back to the spiritual world. They will not help you at all. And that is how it's mentioned. They will delay the journey back to the spiritual world. So the demigods saw Parikshit Maharaj going back to the spiritual world. And when Parikshit Maharaj, when the demigods saw that, they went and told Brahma that this is what has happened with Srimad Bhagavatam between Sudeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj was able to go back to the spiritual world after hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Brahma was also a little bit surprised that has Srimad Bhagavatam got that kind of special strength in it. And thinking that, Brahma in his assembly brought all the scriptures and had a very, very detailed discussion with all the great sages who were present there. And in that discussion, the conclusion was, Bhagavatam will weigh, the weight of Srimad Bhagavatam spiritually is far, far higher than all the other Vedic literatures combined. So, from this we can see that whether it is Brahma, whether it is Lord Shiva, or whether it is anybody else, all Puranas you will find, it is spoken between Lord Shiva and Parvati, Uma Maheshwara Samvadam. That between Uma is Shri Parvati and Maheshwara is Lord Shiva. It's a discussion between them. And in the Bhagavatam, it is a discussion between Lord Shiva and Parvati that this story is referred to, that Brahma realized that the Shrimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Puranam, Puranamalam, and he also accepted that. So that Shrimad Bhagavatam, with all its glory behind it, when the Supreme Lord Krishna was leaving Dwaraka and eventually leaving goodbye to this world, leaving from this world, Uddhava went to see him. So, among all the people who were present in the Ugrasena's, King Ugrasena's assembly, Uddhava was the most intelligent person who was able to see that Krishna is preparing himself for going back to the spiritual world. Uddhava went up to him, paid his obeisances and told Krishna that, my dear Krishna, if you leave this world, what will happen? Have you thought about it? He said. Uddhava was in friendly terms with Krishna. Up to this point, Uddhava and Krishna's relationship was just like close friends, like Arjuna was there. So, he says, and Krishna always took Uddhava very, very seriously. He says in the Bhagavatam also, the reason why Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan to see the gopis was because Krishna knew that Uddhava alone had intelligence to understand the devotion of the gopis. Nobody else. So it says, Vrishninam pravaro mandri krishnasya daidasaha shisho brihaspade sakshal Uddhava buddhisattvaah. Buddhisattva, he is such an intelligent person. Brihaspade is disciple. So you can see that Uddhava is a very, very qualified person. And therefore, he had the intelligence to sense in advance what is coming. What is coming means that Krishna was leaving. And when Krishna has left this world, what is in it for me to live in this world? This is Uddhava's realization. So Uddhava said to Krishna that soon it looks to me that you are preparing to leave. Krishna said to Uddhava, your thoughts are not in the wrong place. Your conclusions are right, he said. Uddhava started weeping after so many years of association with Krishna. At that point, Uddhava mentioned to Krishna that if you disappear from this world, this beautiful form which so many people had an opportunity to see and worship and surrender, what will the future generations will do? He asked this question to Krishna directly. What will they do? You will go, and once you're gone, this form, particular form of Krishna, who is present in form of us as Gopalananda or any other Krishna's manifestations, but that beautiful form, if you disappear from here, what will happen to this material world? Krishna, Uddhava asked this question. Krishna for a while sat quiet, didn't answer that question. It says there, they didn't answer that question. And asked Uddhava, what do you think I should do? He asked Uddhava about it. Uddhava said, once you have gone, today the devotees are able to chant your different names, different holy names, by your different pastimes, what you have performed. They will also disappear after a while, once you have gone. They will not chant because they may not remember you, they may not able to, they will think about your different pastimes anytime. And you will be gone, and eventually that will also go. So that opportunity of chanting the holy name also will go. Your beautiful form will go. So what do these people will do? Uddhava asked this question. Look, Uddhava's concern for the remaining people in this world and for many, many generations of human society who are going to come later. Keeping all this in mind, Uddhava asked this question to Krishna. Krishna said to Uddhava at that point that when I was present here, when I am present here in this form, there were so many people who could see me. Kamsa could see me. Duryodhana could see me. Yudhishthira Maharaj could see me. Arjuna has seen me. And so many, you have seen me. But everybody did not become a devotee. Only few people understood my position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Many others thought about me as nothing but either an enemy or like another ordinary human being, and they were dealing with me in that way. But now, my next move from now is, when Uddhava asked, should you not appear again in this world, Krishna said to him that I will be present in this world, but I will not be present in this present form. I will enter into Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the point Krishna enters into Srimad Bhagavatam. And Krishna said, till now anybody could see me, but now if you want to see me, you should search for me in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is what Krishna has instructed Uddhava. Tirodhaya pravishtoham Srimad Bhagavatam. This special literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, will carry me. And you can search for me in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find me there. So from this you can see Srimad Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna. If you want to understand, if you want to know Krishna, you have to search for him through Srimad Bhagavatam. And from 5,000 years, great devotees and acharyas, they search for Krishna through Srimad Bhagavatam. Goswamis search for Krishna through Srimad Bhagavatam. All six Goswamis sat and searched for Krishna through Srimad Bhagavatam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught the Goswamis how to search for Krishna through Srimad Bhagavatam. All the great acharyas, they search Krishna through Srimad Bhagavatam. And all the great devotees and commentators on Srimad Bhagavatam, they are searching for Krishna. They were searching for Krishna. Today people are searching for Krishna through Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the future also, people will search for Krishna through Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is not different from Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam is the direct manifestation of Krishna in another incarnation. It's another literary way Krishna has appeared in this world. That is the potency of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this Srimad Bhagavatam, which was given so much importance, Shudena Tena Chanjasa, in the Bhagavatam it says there, that how does Bhagavatam present come to us? Shudena Arthena Chanjasa. Shudena means directly instructing us certain things. That means through glorification and through direct instructions. Arthena means again through certain history of the devotees. And that way it is presented to us. Chanjasa, and also by the experiences of the other personalities. Like if you look into Srimad Bhagavatam carefully, you will notice so many interesting things. Like, normally, we all have one habit. What is our habit? To think and dream so many things. We all dream so many things, isn't it? Nobody is free from, I don't know, I dream a lot, and I know a lot of people also do dreaming, which is called as Manoraji. Manoraji means, just go on a mental plane. When you sit idle, you think about so many things. So many unnecessary things we are thinking all the time. And from whatever that is happening in this world, which is of much interest to us, or even a little interest to us, that will come to the mind. And the mind gets absorbed in that. For example, if it is World Cup, so the World Cup is going on through so many people's mind to such a degree that they will find it difficult even to, they are willing to keep away all other engagements. How, no matter how important it is, for them, at that very point, the World Cup is more important. Our cricket match is important. So this is called Manoraji. Manoraji means to dream in the mind. So many things we are dreaming. But having you start dreaming Srimad Bhagavatam, just see what happens. What Bhagavatam brings into your own mind. There's a lot of things Bhagavatam will start. Krishna says Bhagavatam is never understood simply by scholarship. That is the one thing Krishna is very straight about that. It says there that Bhaktya Bhagavatam Yayam Na Vilpatya Na Tigayam. Not by knowledge of the language or Sanskrit knowledge or scholarship, not Ikaya, not by commentary, you will understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is understood one and only one thing. By constantly reading it and constantly surrendering to Krishna, your mind. If you do that, Krishna will automatically, in this daydreams or the dreams what we do all the time, Krishna will come in and tell us what is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is the strength of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, this dreaming thing, if you think about it, you can see there, so many things will come. When Krishna spoke Bhagavatam to Lord Brahma, he limited that into 4 verses. So that's where Bhagavatam began, as the seed of Srimad Bhagavatam. He didn't say anything more than that, just 4 verses, that's all. Finished everything in that. And that was enough, because Lord Brahma, with 4 heads and the intelligence he had, that was enough for him to understand what Krishna was talking about in the 4 verses he finished. When Brahma instructed Narada Muni, what happened? Brahma expanded that, isn't it? He expanded Bhagavatam a little bit more into 3 chapters. That's how it is you find in the second canto. The Brahma expanded. What did he add on to it? He added all the incarnations also. A number of incarnations he added into that 4 verses, expanded that and explained that to Sri Narada Muni. So Narada Muni got Bhagavatam from Brahma in a little bit expanded form. And when Narada Muni spoke to Vedavyas, what did he do? What did he do? He added on to what he got from Brahma, his own personal experience into it. Is it not? So you can see, when Narada Muni was talking to Vedavyas, he was not only talking what Brahma has told him, he has told Vedavyas, everything what Brahma has told me is absolutely true. Look at me, he said. And he is telling Narada Muni, who is the embodiment of humility, who will never talk one word about himself, and who is the greatest acharya in the bhakti process, has not spoken, and first time in the Srimad Bhagavatam he spoke about himself. The finest example for this is me, he says to Vedavyas. And then what did he do? He added everything. Whatever personally, that is why in that 5th chapter you will find Hari Kirtana Gauravam, the seriousness of glorifying Krishna. Narada Muni added on to this Srimad Bhagavatam and presented it to Vedavyasa Maharshi. And what did Vedavyas do? When Vedavyas got Srimad Bhagavatam from Sri Narada Muni, Vedavyas had got a big distress in his heart. That distress is different than the kind of distress what we have. We haven't got, fortunately, we haven't got that kind of distress of Vedavyas. Vedavyas' distress is known in the Shastra as Pravachaka Dukham. Pravachaka Dukham means these personalities like Vedavyasa Maharshi, they are lamenting about the condition of this world, of the living entities, particularly the human society, who throw away their human life in sense gratification and killing themselves and going back into the lower species again. He feels compassion for them because they can see that the living entity is in wasting his lifetime in silly things and engaging in sense gratification, loses a golden opportunity given to him, and eventually loses his spiritual benefit, what he could get from that life. So they have a distress because of that, and that's known as Pravacha Dukham. So Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, made it into 12 cantos, 335 chapters, and 18,000 verses. Like that, he put Srimad Bhagavatam to whom? To Sudeva Goswami, Sri Shukam. So he gave that to Sri Shukam, and Sudeva Goswami presented that to Parikshit Maharaj in his 7 days when he had the time to talk to Parikshit. At the end of every chapter, if you look into the original Bhagavatam, you will find that there is a statement, Srimad Bhagavati Mahapurani Paramahamsa Samhirayam. That is how every chapter finishes in the original Bhagavatam. Paramahamsa Samhira means that literature which is only touched, only read, in other words, only read by the Paramahamsas. Paramahamsa Samhidayam. That is how every chapter finishes. Srimad Bhagavati Mahapurani Paramahamsa Samhitayam, then it will say which canto, which chapter, and that finishes. That is how it is in the Bhagavatam. So, from this you can see that this spotless Srimad Bhagavatam is enjoyed by Paramahamsas. It is their literature, not for the crows of this world. It is meant for the Paramahamsas, the swans. So the Paramahamsas, they enjoy Srimad Bhagavatam. And Sri Sudan was a Paramahamsa like that. When he went to Vedavyasa Maharshi, requesting him to learn, to teach him Srimad Bhagavatam, what attracted Sri Sudan so much to Srimad Bhagavatam, it is mentioned. What has actually pulled Sri Sudan to Vedavyas to learn? Sri Sudan, you have to remember that he was already a fully realized soul, completely situated in his transcendental position, not with a tinge of any of these modes of nature, free from all that. And it is him who is going to Vedavyas, asking him to teach him Srimad Bhagavatam. So there has to have some very, very, very solid reason behind it. Otherwise it cannot happen. For a personality like Sumadeva Goswami to go to Vedavyas, who is in such a transcendently situated position that he was able to ask this question to teach him Srimad Bhagavatam, that what actually pulled him towards Bhagavatam, it says there. That Vedavyasa Maharshi was preparing to teach Srimad Bhagavatam, but prior to that, Sumadeva Goswami thought about this. And when he thought about this incident, that except when the Supreme Lord came as Krishna, when the Krishna concept came down, whatever incarnation has, the Lord has shown so much mercy, he couldn't see anywhere else. Now, in Kali Yuga, there is a statement in the Puranas that only if you do a sinful activity, it will have its reactions in Kali Yuga. That is the nature of Kali. That suppose sometimes you get some strange ideas in your head to engage in some sinful activity. Just for example. But if you don't execute that, although the thoughts have come into your mind or you've made some, probably some plans to do that, if you don't engage in that sinful activity, you are not to suffer the consequences or the reactions of that sinful activity. That is the role of Kali. Or in other ages, it is different. That even if you think in a sinful direction, that can cause problems, because that will cause difficulties. But in the age of Kali, one is given this a little bit concession by Krishna's arrangement, that only if you engage in sinful activity, but if thoughts have come somehow, it will not destroy, or it, you don't have to pay any sinful reaction for that directly. But on the other hand, on the other side of it, if you simply think about Krishna, you don't have to do anything. If you just think all the time about Krishna through Srimad Bhagavatam or through any other great literature of the devotees, you have benefited from that. Just see how merciful Krishna is. That in the age of Kali, this is Krishna's a special concession given to us. You will see this in the second canto when when Lord Brahma was talking. He got this concession for us. That in the age of Kali, even if we think in our mind about Krishna in some way or the other, even that very thoughts will help us or elevate this in our spiritual consciousness. Is there any other Lord, God, who is more merciful than Krishna? Just think about it. That just by, on the one hand, if you engage in sinful life, you have to suffer the sinful reactions. But here it says, you don't have to do it. You don't have to go and do this particular thing. That, okay, there is a pious activity, you want to serve Krishna something. For some reason or the other, you are not able to do it. But Krishna says, take Srimad Bhagavatam and read it. And think about me. Even then, Krishna is magnificent, Krishna is magnanimous and kind and merciful to that devotee. That is Krishna's special benediction or special mercy in the age of Kali. And that is why Srimad Bhagavatam becomes so small, so important. So it is in this way that when Sri Sivan heard about this, that why is that Why is that this Krishna has shown so much mercy to his, not even devotees, to his own enemies? Purana came to feed poison to Krishna. And what did Krishna do? Krishna sent her back to the spiritual world and gave the same position as his own mother. Yashoda Devi's position was offered to Purana also. So, is there any other incarnation has shown this kind of magnanimity or such a nature what Krishna has shown any time before? And therefore he says, Aho Vagiyam Stanakala Kodam Jigham Sayava Yadapya Sadhi Lede Gadinda Tujidam Kudanyu Kamva Vayalam Sharanam Rajayam. Who else should I take shelter? Sri Shukan asked there. Who else should I take shelter? This is how Sri Shukan spoke there. Who else should I take shelter? Who has given liberation to even Putana, who has come to feed him poison and sends him back to the spiritual world? Aho Bhagiyam Stanagala Gudam Jigham Sayabhaya Lapya Sandhi Le Bhegadim Dhatru Jidam Kudanyo Kamva Dayalam Sharanam Prajema. And when Sri Shukan started speaking this, his tears were coming from his eyes. And he pays obeisances to Krishna at that point. So this is the Paramahamsa's realization. When one comes to that Paramahamsa platform, one can understand all these rasas of the rasa or the mellows of all these great personalities. Otherwise, till we get to that point, we have to continue reading Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'll stop there. And the same questions we take it from there.
If Krishna is so merciful and like this, why is it that we are still suffering in our own lives, we suffer situation?
Yes.
If Krishna is giving mercy like this to the demons, then
yes,
why doesn't he give us the mercy in that way as well?
Yes, Krishna's mercy, to understand Krishna, in our state of mind, I was saying this, that why in every chapter at the end it says Paramahamsa Samhitayam. We are not Paramahamsas. That is the biggest problem what we have. We have so much dirt in our mind that it's not pure enough. There is a nice story about this, that one group of brahmanas were discussing this. This happened some years ago. So one of them, he always relished Bhagavatam, and he used to give a lot of pressure to others also through Srimad Bhagavatam, because Brahminical culture means all this, Srimad Bhagavatam. And the system was that in the early hours in the morning, this was a time, it didn't exist, not long ago it did exist sometime, but nowadays it's all changing so much. But at that time the system was that in the early hours in the morning they will perform their Sandhyavandana ceremonies and paying their obeisances to the deity, and deity worship goes on, everything. But somewhere around 10 o'clock in the morning, when more people start coming to the temple, the system was they will assemble in one place, and somebody who has got attraction for Srimad Bhagavatam, he will speak from Bhagavatam, and many people will come to assemble and listen to them. So one day in a temple in a village, this person was speaking from Srimad Bhagavatam, and sometimes many people will come and listen to him, and sometimes they will go back to their own villages and they will talk about what they heard here in the temple from Srimad Bhagavatam. This is natural, that you hear Srimad Bhagavatam sometime and you want to discuss Bhagavatam. As I was saying, that this daydreaming, if you can switch on from so many other things to Srimad Bhagavatam, that will bring a lot of profit to all of us. So this was a usual scene. In those days, people didn't have such a busy lifestyle what we had. They lived a much quieter life and much a slow pace also, so they had, their mind was not infected with modes of fashion like our lifestyle. It is such a difficult job when the mind is all the time engaged in so much passionate activities. But anyway, what happened was, that after this one of these meetings, some of them went back to their village. And then they decided that they should invite him to come and speak Srimad Bhagavatam in their temple, in their area. So he was invited, and he was naturally happy to go and to lecture from Srimad Bhagavatam. So when he went there, he had to spend a few days there. That time, I think, he used to spend about 7 days in reading Srimad Bhagavatam. So the system was that you read Srimad Bhagavatam, you begin at 5 o'clock in the morning. Then you finish at about 7 o'clock in the evening. That means somewhere around 14 hours in a day. In this 14 hours time, you have breaks for breakfast between 6:30 and 7:30, a short break at about 9:30 to 10:00, another lunch break between 12 to 1:30 or 2 o'clock, and then a break in the afternoon for about 30 minutes. And by the time your whole day, if you have spent listening to Bhagavatam till about 7 o'clock in the evening, when you go home, by all means, your mind will be so much so much influenced by Srimad Bhagavatam that you want to come back and start the next morning again. That is how that system works. And this is how the Saptahams of the 7 days Bhagavatam lectures will become like that. So when it was executed properly, these things did exist. And when this person went and spoke for 7 days in another place, he came back to the temple where he originally belonged to. So when he came back, the other Brahmanas who were in the temple asked him, how was the program? How did the program go in the other temple? This Brahmana laughed and he said, we asked him, why were a lot of people to listen to Srimad Bhagavatam? He said, there were a lot of people. But, he said, but what? He said, but the people who were present there, they were very receptive. Receptive means, when you hear Srimad Bhagavatam is full of mellows. Different rasas are there in the Bhagavatam. But if I hear Srimad Bhagavatam thinking that I have to get rid of my sinful reactions, therefore I am hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. If you sit with that attitude to hear Bhagavatam, that's not very good. Bhagavatam has to be enjoyed. It is meant for the pleasure of the devotees. And there is a way of enjoying Srimad Bhagavatam also. When Bhagavatam was originally spoken by Vedavyas, and when Ganesh started writing it down, sometimes when he heard certain things, he could see the rasa in that. He was experiencing the mellow of Srimad Bhagavatam, and his two wings were flapping at the time. The ears were flapping. It says that. So that is how Bhagavatam is. And Bhagavatam is not something meant to bore people with it, but it's actually meant to enjoy. There is rasa in Srimad Bhagavatam. So he said, when I went there, he said, I saw a lot of people there. There's a lot of people, but most of the people, they were all looked like to me that they were the younger sisters of Lord Narasimhadev's mother, he said. So suddenly when you hear this, you don't understand what he's trying to say. He said, Lord Narasimhadev's mother's younger sisters, they looked like, he said. What he was trying to say was, who is Lord Narasimhadev's mother? No, who is Lord Narasimhadev's mother? Lord Narasimhadev's mother is a pillar, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And these people, he said, they were sitting there. They were like those pillars. They were just, without any emotions and feelings, they just sat there, looked at me, 12 hours a day, 7 days, continuously, and they all went home, he said. Nobody said one word. Nobody asked me one thing. No, I couldn't. I was looking at all their faces. No change of expression, feelings, nothing. Everything like solid stone. That is not Srimad Bhagavatam. Listening to Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is not. That is why it's like. Why is it like that? And especially in the West, I have to say this. We are so much stone hearted in our mind that we can't open up. We have to keep everything closed all the time. That's what we enjoy. Because if we see that we express our emotions and feelings to others, we feel it's not a good thing. But that is not Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is meant for people who have got emotions and feelings. Chitra adratvam hridaye vijindya bahuvi siddhyanti janmantare. Only after many, 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 many births, one will enjoy Srimad Bhagavatam. Ardra means when one's mind is able to relish Srimad Bhagavatam, and in pure human consciousness he can understand the glory of Srimad Bhagavatam. So what I was saying was that when you say that why Krishna is, we are not able to enjoy, it is because of this problem. That we are like this, Nasimhadev's mother's younger sisters we are. We haven't got that feeling for anything. We live, we satisfy our senses and we die. That's all we gain in this life, nothing else. And no other change in our consciousness or mind. So this is necessary, that Bhagavatam has to be read and read, constantly reading Srimad Bhagavatam all the time. And this Bhagavatam's potency, if you start speaking about it, there is a nice story behind it also. That normally we think, not we think, and a lot of people also thinking the same way, that they do so many things in this world, and they think that spiritual life is also necessary. Some people are misunderstanding. So, I'm not saying everybody is like that, but quite a lot of people in this modern world is like that. That we think spiritual life is necessary. But their way of looking at spiritual life is a little different. They think, oh, I need to have my business and making money also. And if Krishna helps me to make a lot of money, I'll give a good part of it to Krishna. They say, they do that also in their life. They will make money through so many
questionable.
It's not only questionable, it's outside the Vedic perception or purview. Mm-hmm. There are so many things which are not allowed from the Vedic point of view. In the modern world it is acceptable, but these are not acceptable from the Vedic point of view. Adharmic or religious principles, ways of making money. They make a lot of money. They make, say, £1 million, they say, oh, I can give Krishna £200,000 or $250,000 out of it. And then he's saying, this happens once. He thinks that, oh, I've done such a wonderful thing. I've given $250,000 to Krishna, I got three-quarters. This is, he has calculated this. And in the eyes of the world, everyone is saying, look at him, what a great devotee. He has given £250,000 to Krishna. And the people who are following, they are also glorifying him. He is also glorifying himself, thinking that I have done such a wonderful thing. You know what he does the next thing? Next thing he does is that he prays to Krishna, look, I got another big business deal coming through. If I get that, you know, I will put gold on all your temple, completely and cover it with gold. That's the next thing I'm going to do. Say, somehow or the other, due to either his good fortune or Krishna's mercy, whatever it is, he needs that contract also. Then the next thing he does is, he covers the whole deity room with gold. So, what happens then? He is thinking, I am very successful in my spiritual life. Look at me. Krishna is supporting me, and I am supporting Krishna. Next thing, I am doing that. And all the devotees who are coming to the temple are saying, do you know who covered this deity room with the gold? That big businessman, you know, he has got so much money in him. This is not spiritual life. We have to remember that. This is not spiritual life. This is not even acceptable for me. The path of religious principles and the path of truthfulness is different. This is not, Krishna doesn't accept all these things. This is materially, you see all these things and you are enamored by all these things. This glamour of money brings so much, even devotees are sometimes infected by that. And then you make millions and I give a million to Krishna and I am glorified by the temple, by the devotees, by the public, everybody. I am such a nice devotee. And he is also thinking like, that's not what Krishna wants. This is what we have to understand. The path of religious principles, path of truthfulness is a different, completely different. If we can stop doing activities which are prevented by Krishna or barred by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, we should be able to do that. If we can do that by the strength of bhakti, that is advancement in spiritual life. Not that I will do some rubbish or some splendor and I will cover it up with another activity. That is not spiritual life. Spiritual life is that truthfulness coming from inside. that by sincere understanding of Krishna's instruction and following and surrendering to Krishna's instruction and able to come out of it without being surrendered to the weakness of will or weakness of the material desires, that is spiritual life. That is beauty of the spiritual life. And that is where you can say one is making progress on the process of bhakti. And otherwise, if all money was the only criteria in making the advancement of spiritual life, all the wealthy people would have been the greatest devotees of the Lord. But it doesn't happen like that. So there is a nice song about it. It's a song called The Smile of the Moon. Once it so happened that there was a very, very rich family, and adjacent to that there was a very poor family who lived. The poor family had no means even to support their daily needs as far as food is concerned. Whereas the wealthy man, he had such a great garden and big lot of fruit trees and other things he grew up there. So one day in this poor family, the children were crying for food, and the mother, out of frustration, told the father that, look at that garden next door, they have got so many fruit trees, why don't we go and get a bunch of bananas from there? Who's going to notice? After all, they've got so much and we haven't got anything to eat either. And she told her husband to go and get this bunch of bananas from there so they can feed the babies. The man also thought, husband thought, that's not a wrong thing to do. What's there after all? I'm only taking something from the next garden. And they have got so much food, so much fruits anyway, it's not so important. He took his knife and went there to cut the bunch of fruits, banana. You know how banana, big bunches comes out. So to cut this banana from the tree plant, banana plant, you have to stand up and look up to call it onto the top and cut it. When he started to cut it, when he looked up, he saw the moon smiling from there. The song is called The Smile of the Moon. The moon is smiling from there. Immediately, somebody told him from inside, what he is doing is not the right thing. He shouldn't do that. Because he is actually breaking the truthfulness, the principle, that he was trying to steal something. He gave up the plan, came back, didn't do anything. When he came back, his wife asked him, what happened? He said to her that I tried to cut that, but when I looked up, I saw the moon looking at me and smiling. He said, and something told me from inside, it's not right for me to do it. And I came back, he said. So she said, you did the right thing actually. Because by now, in her mind also was saying, something was telling her that it's not proper to do that. By then, they heard a knock at the door. Opened up the door, they couldn't see anything, but there was a golden bowl lying there. Somebody has left a golden bowl. And the story is that he took the golden bowl, sold it, got enough money to feed them enough. Whether it is golden bowl or silver bowl, that's not the question. Question is this, that when our mind turns into sinful activities, is something stopping us from inside? And that stopping of that going in the sinful direction or the wrong direction is what happens with when the devotion increases. When bhakti comes into the heart, this is what Bhagavatam is trying to bring into the person's consciousness. When the bhakti in its pure form comes to a living entity, the desire for committing sinful life and irreligious way to live in this world will go away from that person's heart. And that is how the Srimad Bhagavatam purifies a person's life. And this is the lesson what we have to learn from Srimad Bhagavatam. I think we'll stop there. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Before we continue the discussion on Lord Varaha's appearance,